This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Trying to start a show here, Grobber. You all right, man? You okay? You all right? Oh, it's pouring? Okay. Les, I'm going to talk to you a little bit later. Yes. Les Grobsy not happy with the Bulls win. You all right? They screwed up a one-car funeral, is what Grobber just told me. Yeah, yeah, the Bulls did do that tonight. I'll tell you why momentarily. Welcome back in to Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, I'm Mark Grody, and I am here until the next day. I'm here until midnight tonight, at which time our guy, Les Grobstein, will take over. We'll give you a quick couple of tidbits on the Bulls here in just a second. After the Bulls do win in overtime over the Wizards, 126-100. Coming up on the show tonight, we got a lot to get to here in a little bit less than 2 hours. Scott Merkin, who covers the White Sox for MLB.com, will join us in just about 10 minutes or so. He'll be on to talk about Eloy Jimenez, and we'll fill you in on the details of that here in just a second. We'll have some Cubs talk coming up, and specifically something that Chris Bryant said, which Cubs fans should like. And I feel like we skimmed past it, and I thought it was incredibly important that he said what he said very recently. Also on the Bears, I was thinking about this, and my Bears sports consciousness goes back to about 1982 or so, like right around the start of the Ditka era. And I was thinking about this, and it's possible that I say this because I'm so close to the situation and I want it to be the case, and I'm willing to accept that. But is 2019 the most anticipated season since 1985? I'm going to go through my list of very anticipated Bears seasons that I jotted down before the show started. We'll get to that in a little bit as well. Also, there are new developments in the Robert Kraft situation, the owner of the New England Patriots, about his recent misgivings, some developments that occurred yesterday, a deal offered, and it would seem that there was a deal rejected today by Bob Kraft. So we'll get into that a little bit. The number is open. Phone lines are open for you. If you call in, it's not going to be Chuck Swirsky and Bill Wennington. It'll be Mark Grody. And 312-644-6767 is the number. We are textable at 670-11. You can find me on Twitter at Mark Grody Sports, G-R-O-T-E, just like my Uncle Jerry, just like the catcher Jerry Grody, the ex-Mets catcher. Yes, he is my uncle. At Mark Grody Sports. That's the way you can do it. Follow me on Twitter. Keep up with us on Twitter, the whole Twitter thing. The Bulls tonight, they did beat the Wizards 126-120 in overtime. By the way, Herb, real quick, what was going on with Bulls Unplugged today? Because as I was walking over, all of a sudden Chuck Swirsky comes back, and it sounded like my old Lincoln Railer high school play-by-play days. It was phone quality.
Somebody on the table, their table, they're broadcasting, it's Rich White himself and Bill Wennington, had unplugged it. It wasn't any of those three.
Are we sure?
Plugged the whole table was off the air. And then also the United Center had problems with the visiting side shot clock. So it went off all at one time, and we were here panicking, playing commercials. And then we're like, Jeff's like, hey, let's get him on the phone. We have to get him on, because it was at the end of the game where Markkanen got flagrantly fouled by Bobby Portis. So we missed that play
wow.
on the air. But luckily that happened, because it gave us a chance to recover and then get the – we actually didn't miss much play-by-play except for the foul.
Yeah, because I usually listen on radio.com like 90% of the time that I'm listening to the Score. I'm online. And a lot of times, like, online I'll go crazy and it'll play like 90 commercials in a row and you just got to reboot it. Like, it does silly things like that. So I just thought it was me. And then right before I shut it down and try to reboot it, I hear Chuck come on in phone quality. because somebody done kicked the cord. And whoever did it knows exactly who that they did it, and they feel horrible about it. They did not get caught. Was Grobber at the game tonight? I think he probably was. I know Schuster was.
Not sure, but I remember I saw a lot of pictures of Les at the Big Ten Championship, the tournament the whole week.
He cut the cord.
On the press row, too, getting a lot of FaceTime on TV.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, Les is wandering the hallways already, so I'll talk to him at midnight about such things. But the Bulls do win in overtime tonight. Chuck Swirsky going heavy on the onions. He was really passing out the onions tonight. There were some big shots. Chris Dunn was just hitting some huge threes in the OT. Lauri Markkanen got himself back together. That was a he-needed-it game. 32 points and 13 rebounds. I don't think he's had a game like that since the last time the Bulls had an obnoxiously long overtime contest. Chris Dunn, 26. He was really good tonight. That was sort of like the Dunn that everybody envisioned when he was picked number 5 overall in the draft a few years ago. I don't know that Dunn is going to be repeatable of something like that, but it was a good game for him. You know, an exciting game, a good win, but you know what? We have to talk about it. Oh, Zach LaVine and Otto Porter were out injured in this game. Cleveland frickin' won tonight. They beat Milwaukee. Milwaukee in Cleveland, 107 to 102. So what that means is that the Bulls could have been a half game back of Cleveland for third worst record in the NBA in the Zion game, but it didn't happen. And I had kind of given up hope a couple weeks ago that the Bulls could squeak back into that third spot, and I always feel horrible and conflicted thinking that way anyway. But the hope was back up, and now it is gone under. 9 games to go, though, for the Bulls. It is not out of the realm of possibility that it could happen. We have a lot to do on the show. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to get into this Eloy Jimenez talk and the potential contract extension that may be coming his way for big bucks. We'll break it down with Scott Merkin. He covers the Sox for MLB.com. He is next. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Something good for the White Sox. Well, then, this hour is being brought to you by Pauly Honda on Milwaukee Avenue in Libertyville. Visit paulyhonda.com. I'm Mark Grody here with you until midnight, building a bridge to the Grobber. If I'm lucky, I'll talk to Grobber at midnight. Eloy Jimenez, per multiple reports, is on the verge of receiving a 6-year extension with the Chicago White Sox, worth what would be a record guaranteed $43 million. Moreover, apparently has a pair of option years that could add up to $32 million, though. Like the way I talk. Mildo altogether. It means that Jimenez could be in the White Sox opening day lineup next Thursday in Kansas City. They don't have to play around with the player eligibility and the extra year and all that kind of stuff, because there would be an extra year built in via the extension. And here to talk about it with us is Scott Merkin. He covers the White Sox for MLB.com. Merk, thanks for being with us. What was your initial reaction to the news? Were you surprised by it at all?
Well, I have to be honest, when I was I was off the last few days, and I was on a plane flying back from Chicago to Phoenix, and when I landed and my phone went back on, I saw the news, and I wasn't that surprised. You know, the guy who first mentioned this was a reporter, I think he's out of the Dominican, Hector Gomez, who seems to have some good connections. He was the one, I believe, who broke the news last year about Wellington Castillo being suspended. And he originally had Jimenez, you know, close to signing an 8-year, $100 million deal. Well, that was, you know, obviously insane. No offense to him, but, I mean, the Sox are not going to give $100 million to a guy who's never had a major league at bat, even though, I guess, you know, you could say you give big money to guys who are drafted and never had a major league at bat. You gave money to Luis Robert, who never had a major league at bat. $100 million for a guy with zero service time seemed a little high. But, you know, you had a feeling that he was on to some discussion going on, and he clearly was. And the deal they announced today certainly made a lot more sense for Jimenez. You know, I think I had a chance to talk to the great Jim Thome, I guess it was a week ago, maybe 10 days ago at this point. Mm-hmm. And he said he saw some similarities in this White Sox young core with the Indians core that he played on from, what was it, like seven? I think they won the division 6 of 7 years from like mid-90 to the early 2000s. And one of the things that group did, and the thing that a lot of these rebuilding teams that have been so successful is they signed those young guys to controllable contracts. So, you know, that gave them a little more leeway to make moves. And this could be the first, you know, step of that. And well, I guess really Tim Anderson was probably the first step of that. And you could even go back to the step before that was Chris Sale, Adam Eaton, and Jose Quintana, which allowed them to even start this rebuild because the deals were so great. It's an exceptional thing the White Sox do. And it, you know, you're basically betting on the future with Eloy Jimenez. This is a deal that you're betting that, you know, when he gets really good, you're going to have cost control. I mean, he could be really good right away, but if he turns out to be a star, you're going to have cost control where he could have made more money than what he has on his contract.
Yeah, no doubt. And speaking of, like, expectations for him and will he be good, or in most cases what people are saying is when he is going to be good, and he is – and because of the hype machine that's so available to us from every single source now, it feels like he is the most assumed major league star, at least around here, since Chris Bryant. Is he capable of dealing with the shine that is going to come with that? And do you agree that this guy is instant success? Because it's not just success. People are saying this guy, no doubt about it, is going to be a star.
Yeah, I mean, he's really an even keel kid. You know, he's one of these guys who every day, you know, the players see us not just the whole year, but like, you know, for 40 some days out here in Arizona, and every day he walks by us, a little pat on the shoulder. Hey, how you doing? Good morning. That kind of thing. And again, now that probably matters to no one in terms of the long run of his success, but I just think he's a kid who can handle this. I will say that we haven't talked to him yet, and I'm not sure when this will be officially announced. You know, I mean, these things don't exactly just materialize one night and they're done the next day. I'm sure this has been talked about for a while, and I'm sure it's going to take a little bit to get it finished off too, but when it is, it'll be interesting to see if whatever you credence you put into his spring struggles a little bit, his what 4-for-26 I think you finished, it may be the Jose Quintana syndrome, and that he was, you know, struggling while, you know, hearing about the extension, and it is getting done, it's not getting done. I remember Rick Hahn talked about how Jose Quintana, like 3 days before they announced his extension, faced Oakland, and in a Cactus League game, he faced 9 hitters, and every single one reached base, and they pulled him from the game. And that was when his contract was being finalized. And even Rick laughed and said, yeah, that one's on me. You know, he was worried about this. And you wonder if that did play in Jimenez's mind. But, yeah, every scout you talk to, you just hear about, you know, he's going to be a star. The two minor things is you hear, you know, will he end up being an outfielder his whole career? Will he eventually go to DH? And then he has had a few, you know, injuries here and there over time. But those are really minor things to deal with. I mean, he's, you know, talked about in the same breath as Vlad Guerrero Jr. They're talked about, right, you know, hand in hand about rookie of the year candidates for 2019 in the American League. So, yeah, he has all the makings of a star, and not only a star, but a guy who will play very well in the city of Chicago.
All right, how about a follow-up to what you were saying about his struggles in spring training, and that maybe that there is a reason for some of that. Because of that, if they are taking that into account, do you think that Eloy Jimenez will be in the White Sox opening day lineup on the real roster when they do open it up next Thursday in Kansas City?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know. There's a certain time you have to go down if you're sent down during the year, unless there's an injury. I'm not sure if that plays out in spring training, but even if it does, it may be that time may be okay for him to come back already. I would see it would be difficult to find a reason why he wouldn't be up on opening day, because you're no longer worried about service time, right?
Right.
I mean, you have him under control for 6 years and then 2 more option years, so possibly 8 years. So that's all out the window. So I don't know if there'd be another reason why you know, I don't put a lot of stock in spring training numbers. You know, I talked to him, other reporters talked to him, and the biggest thing I gained from him is that, you know, he was doing what he wanted. He said his timing was a little off, and this tells you what a good hitter he is. They said the one thing that bothered him was that he was striking out too much. He was missing too many, swinging and missing at too many pitches, and that's just not his game. He's a power hitter who also makes contact and will hit for average, but he certainly never seemed to be, you know, kind of hanging his head or saying, man, I'm really in a funk. He just kept smiling and saying, I'm close. I feel it's right there. And I saw a couple of videos when I was off online about him hitting a mammoth home run in the minor league side. So I think he's going to be fine. But yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and hear from Rick exactly on that one and see what the plan is. But I would certainly expect him to be in the lineup on, you know, March 28th in Kansas City. But then again, I could be wrong. But that seemed with this contract, if it's official by then, it would seem to be a strong likelihood.
Yeah, and Scott Merkin joining us here from MLB.com. He covers the White Sox. I'm Mark Grody here until midnight with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. All right, so if Ricky Renteria does have Aloy to play with, where do you think he... I don't know his tendencies necessarily, Renteria. Is he going to, will he ease him into the lineup? Will he, you know, bat him sixth or seventh to start off? Or do you think he'll put him where many think that he's going to end up, as in a two, three, or four guy in the lineup?
I mean, I would think probably, I'm not sure what you, maybe fifth would make sense, like out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, with Abreu third, Alonso fourth, him fifth, that would seem to make sense to me. I mean, I guess he could even be cleanup at some point, but. Yeah, I think he'll ease him in. I was just talking to someone today about this, that, you know, I think even, you know, I mean, certainly when he gets here, he'll be a starter for the White Sox. There's no question about that. But I do think there'll probably be days early on where they may sit him against a, you know, against a Corey Kluber. You know, they have in Kansas City to start the year, and then they have a weird schedule where they have like two games in like 4 days in Cleveland. And, you know, maybe Kluber or Bauer or Carrasco will be one of those, and maybe they give him one of those 2 days off. Just to kind of manage it against him, you know, maybe not throw him into the Wolves right away. But I think he can handle it. He's that good an offensive player. You know, people I've talked to have said he's one of the best offensive prospects. His scouts and guys from our MLB pipeline, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, who are great, you know, really highly knowledgeable. Just, you know, he's one of the best offensively profiled prospects in a long, you know, I guess Chris Bryant is a good comparison to him. And Chris Bryant certainly has been great. That run that Chris Bryant had, where he was College Player of the Year, mm-hmm. Rookie of the Year, MVP, and they won the World Series. Hard to top a 3-year period like that, I think. But
right.
I think Jimenez is on those same lines. So yeah, I would guess maybe, you know, anywhere from fourth to sixth, but more likely maybe fifth to start off with.
Yeah, and aside from Aloy, or really with him, I mean, he would have been here within the first few weeks of the season, regardless. So. Now that we're coming close to the real season starting, what are your expectations for the White Sox? I mean, are they still a 100-loss team like they were last year? I mean, are the Sox fans going to deal with badness again? Or do you think that they can be a dark horse in any way, shape, or form?
I will say this. I don't know about dark horse. I mean, I know that division is not good in the sense that Detroit and Kansas City are both early on in their rebuilds, and now it looks like Detroit lost their staff ace. I know Michael Fulmer is getting other opinions, but that's certainly a huge hit to Ron Gardenhire and his crew there. Cleveland has kind of adjusted on the fly because they could in that division and still probably win that division. And Minnesota's got a lot of talent, and Minnesota is probably better than they were last year. So still, I don't know if I'd say they're a dark horse quite yet, but I would say this, and I'll be honest, that if they lose 100 games again this year, then something went wrong. You know, I know they're in year three of the rebuild, and rebuilds are not designed usually to be a contender in year three, you know, more like year four or year five. But they should be better than 100 losses this year, too. They should have guys who are these talented young players who should take a step forward this year. Does that manifest itself in 500? Maybe a little better if things go great. That would be, you know, what, a 20-win improvement. But I really do think 74 to 78 wins should be the low-end or the realistic expectations for this year. That they should be, you know, Rick talked about this at the end of last year, that he wasn't ready to say the word contender yet, but he was ready to talk about being competitive. And I think that's what their design is this year. So that they should be a better team, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think there's two guys, maybe three, on my list of White Sox guys that I think everybody, I don't know, secretly is the word, but I think that maybe secretly assuming that Yoan Moncada is going to be much better, that Lucas Giolito is going to be much better. And I'd even throw Tim Anderson in that group, too. Am I missing anybody out of that crew? And is it realistic to think that those guys will all take major step-ups?
No, I think that's – I mean, I think also a guy who finished strong last year and actually had a pretty good overall year, Ronaldo Lopez, might even be a step better this year. You know, I think one of the key things for this White Sox team is the bullpen. And – for whatever it's worth, and it probably matters, you know, just a little bit above zero, it's not been very good in spring training. In fact, it's been pretty off the mark in spring training. But see, again, I'll go back to an example I remember hearing from the Cubs side a few years ago. Wade Davis, when they traded for him, got hit pretty hard in a couple outings when he was out there pitching. And the thing was, on that day, both outings, I remember reading that he was working on a certain pitch each time, and that was it. You know, so he might not have he definitely would not have thrown the same pitches in game situations that weren't Cactus League game situations. And that may be some of the case with some of the Sox pitchers, but the Sox pitchers, the bullpen on paper, has the potential to be the best in the AL Central. Now, again, the AL Central is not a hugely deep division, especially in the bullpens, but that will be a big telling point, I think, in how the Sox step forward, is how, you know, Herrera and Colome and Nate Jones and Jace Fry as kind of the front four. Ian Hamilton had a little bit of a setback. Him and his fiance, luckily, are okay, but they had a car accident earlier in spring training that kind of messed with his shoulder a little bit, but I think he's a guy who's got closing potential. Zach Birdie may be here at some point during the year, you know, coming back from the final stages of his Tommy John recovery. So there's a lot of hope there, but I think the bullpen is going to be a key factor in whether this team makes a significant step up from the 62 and 100 last year.
So right now there's no named closer, correct?
I mean, I think it's going to be Colome.
Okay.
But I think, I'll go back a few years. I remember Robin Ventura's first year. We knew who the closer was when Hector Santiago came out to pitch the ninth inning in game two of the season. So, and I suspect that Ricky Renteria will handle it the same way when you see the Sox as a lead. And I, you know, even if Colome is the closer, I don't know if that's going to mean he's going to have every single opportunity. One of the things that Rick Hahn did on paper, at least, you know, and Kenny Williams in the front office, is they seem to give Ricky Renteria better, you know, high leverage options in that late innings. And we'll see how they play out now. We'll see, you know, once you throw spring training away, and really no one cares about spring training stats unless you're kind of a young guy like Danny Mendick, who's had a great camp and putting your name on the map a little bit. But once it gets to when the stats count and it's real baseball time, we'll see how that core develops back there. But yeah, I think Colome is going to be the guy, whether he's announced or not, but there will be other options to go to, and Herrera and Jones and Fry in the late innings.
Merkin, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate you being a little bit flexible with. But you're in Arizona right now, right? So it's like,
yeah,
what, eight?
It's early. Don't worry. It's okay. We're all good.
So they don't believe in daylight savings time or something like that. So it's like 2 hours.
You know,
now,
I know it's always tough to figure. I don't think they ever change. I think they always keep the same time. And they just got to remember that when you're calling back to Chicago, or especially if you're calling out east late at night, when you. That's the worst, when you call someone at 9, they're like, I've been asleep for an hour. What are you doing? That kind of thing.
Right. And for those of us hosting shows late at night, you know, people being available in Arizona is just very perfect for us. So thank you, sir.
No problem. Anytime, Mark.
That is Scott Merkin. He covers the White Sox for MLB.com. You can find Scott Merkin, on Twitter as well, at Scott Merkin, talking about Eloy Jimenez. Right there, and it is nice that there is something good for the White Sox to discuss. They absolutely needed something like that. And again, if you didn't hear today, because we did have a Bulls game, a long Bulls game, a Bulls win in overtime, a potential 6-year extension worth what would be a record guaranteed $43 million for Eloy Jimenez. Could be in the lineup next week, next Thursday in Kansas City. To me, there's absolutely no excuse at this point to not have Eloy in the lineup. He better be in the lineup, unless there's some technical business reason that I don't know about a guy getting sent down. Does he have to stay down for a certain amount of time? I'm not sure about that. We'll look into it. But at this point, it'd be really stupid for Eloy to spend any more time in the minor leagues to begin the season. While we're at it, the White Sox home opener is Thursday, April 4th. That's against Seattle. So it means the White Sox will participate in 3 opening days in the first 6 days of their season. That's when you add in Cleveland's home opener on April 1st as well. So Jimenez sent down to AAA 7 days ago, expected to start the season in Charlotte, but it does not appear that that is going to happen. The Sox, I don't know. I don't know if it's right to say that they owe this to the fans at this point, or they didn't need to concede it, even if they were thinking about leaving him down in AAA at this point. You know, that there's just no reason at this point to leave him down there. If the Sox, if they want to put him down in the order, a low leverage sort of spot in the batting order for right now, I think that's fine. But there is so much room for improvement in the White Sox outfield right now when you go through those names. John Jay, Adam Engel, Daniel Polka, Lurie Garcia, Nicky Delmonico. There is room for Eloy right away. All right, when we come back, more on Jimenez as the night goes on. Also, I want to play you some tape from Chris Bryant from yesterday. Something that I think that was really important to hear, that if you're a Cubs fan, something that I wasn't sure if we would hear from Chris Bryant in while he's sort of, you know, flirting with numbers and, you know, the idea of an extension for him and his free agency coming up 3 years down the road and all these big whopper numbers that he is seeing going by. I thought he said something really important. We'll play that for you next. It's Mark Grody until midnight here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. What's going on? Mark Grody with you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm available to you. 312-644-6767. Always textable, always reading your text, always refreshing the text screen. 670-11 is the way to do that. Coming up, we're going to talk Bears and the 2019 season and compare it to past seasons. I'll give you some of my thoughts on the moves that the Bears have made in this offseason, and specifically the move they made at safety, bringing in HaHa Clinton Dix to, in essence, replace Adrian Amos, who is off to the Green Bay Packers. Robert Kraft Developments, the owner of the New England Patriots, we'll go down that in a little bit. Grobber coming up at midnight, and again, you anytime, 312-644-6767 is the number. We're talking about the White Sox and Eloy Jimenez on the verge of hopefully for the White Sox sake, getting that long-term deal done worth $43 million guaranteed. And that brings us to the Cubs now and Chris Bryant, who 27 years old right now, which is hard to believe because I thought all Cubs prospects stayed 23 years old forever. Like every time we talked about the Cubs prospects, they're always, oh my God, they're only 22. Chris Bryant is now 27 years old. He becomes a free agent in 3 years. He has watched Mike Trout accept a 12-year, $426 million deal. A dozen years, and you know everybody believes that he deserves that. Why wouldn't you? Nolan Arenado, 8 years, $260 million. His buddy Bryce Harper, 13 years, $330 million. Things like this portend well for Chris Bryant. He talked yesterday, and here's something I didn't hear much about. And I thought that what we're about to play here right now, I thought was really important to hear. I'm going to let you hear it right now, and then I'll tell you why I think it's so important.
I think anytime you can show a loyalty to the team that drafted you and you came up with and you established relationships with all these people, I mean, any human being would want to do that. I mean, it's no secret that everybody in this clubhouse loves playing in Chicago. We love everything about the organization. So everybody in this clubhouse would want to finish their careers, you know, with this team, myself included.
I didn't necessarily think that we would hear that from Chris Bryant yet. And I know, I get it. That's like sort of free agent to be 101, be complimentary of the team that you're with. No matter what the sport is, you're going to talk about wanting to stay where you are, unless you really hate your city. You want to stay where you are for the rest of your career. But I was a little bit nervous for a while that we wouldn't hear that utterance from him. And you can even call it cliche if you'd like. Just because of that. The way he was, quote unquote, treated, you know, in his rookie year with the service time and delaying it so the Cubs could own an extra year of Chris Bryant. And of course, we all applauded it. I applauded it. I thought, it was the obvious move. It's slam dunk. It was not like Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, of all the smart and really productive things that they have done with their baseball lives. This was one of them. And it was the obvious thing to do. You get that extra year of service time out of Chris Bryant. But just the way he had been talking in this offseason and this kind of new confidence, a little bit of bravado from Chris Bryant, I didn't necessarily think that we would get that from him. The I love playing here. I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to stay here. Complimentary of the fans and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure like inside he genuinely felt that, but I didn't know if he would express that publicly just because of the 1 year and the fact that his agent is Scott Boras. So and the fact that he is the representative is Chris Bryant for the union for the Cubs. So, you know, it may not mean a damn thing, and Chris Bryant may end up elsewhere when he does become a free agent. But I thought it was important to to hear that from Chris Bryant, and I didn't think that we would. The interesting thing about Chris Bryant is as nice of a human being as he comes across. I mean, you've heard him on The Score a lot. He was a regular here last year on The Score. You've heard tons of interviews with him. He is as nice of not just a baseball player, but of a human being as it comes around. And I'm always afraid these days to talk about athletes and saying that they're genuinely nice people, because a lot of times you think that they're really nice and then they go and do something bad and it ruins the whole thing. It's pretty safe to say Chris Bryant is a really good guy. But one thing that I don't think people know about Chris Bryant, he is, when it comes to playing and competing and getting what's coming to him, he is a mother effer. Like, he is probably, him and John Lester may be the most confident and competitive guys in that clubhouse. He is supremely, Chris Bryant, confident in his skills. He thinks he is the best player in that dugout, in that clubhouse, in the league. So, you know, he is the nice guy, but he is out to kill you. He's got that little bit of killer in him that few athletes do have, and I don't know if a lot of people know that about Chris Bryant. So, and I think that that's going to carry into, you know, when he does become a free agent. And I don't know. I don't know what the Cubs are thinking at this point. If they want to give Chris Bryant something like Bryce Harper, if they've offered it, I don't think he's going to get a Mike Trout offer anytime soon. But that does make this a really important year for Chris Bryant, too, just to kind of remind people of how good he is, being that he was out injured last year. They messed with his swing a little bit with the top hand. It sounds like he's back to normal, and everything you've heard from every analyst in Arizona this year is that KB doesn't want anything to do with talking about injured, his swing. It's all good. It's all good. It's all good. He's absolutely 100%. That does bring up another question, though, about the Cubs' core and some of the players that you take seriously going forward. Aside from Chris Bryant, who else would you like to see, or do you think will get one of those in-season extensions like Nolan Arenado has gotten, like Mike Trout has gotten, aside from Chris Bryant, because that would be the one that I know everybody would vote for that one. But at this point, there's some other guys to look into. And all these guys come up right around the same time, 2022, 2023. Of course, Javier Baez comes to mind based on what he did last year. You know, MVP runner-up, a guy who, it appears, finally started to figure some things out that he hadn't in previous years. A superstar defensively, always. And the flash was always there, but there were things with hitting. It feels like Javier Baez is one of those guys that is going to get just a little bit better every single year. And I do believe that there's legitimacy with Javier Baez. Anthony Rizzo is another really interesting case, because we all know that Rizzo took, you know, a team-friendly deal a few years back. He did it for himself, and I could kind of feel why Anthony Rizzo did it, because he'd had kind of a star-crossed career up until that point that he took the extension, that he had, in essence, failed in San Diego, had been traded from Boston, failed in San Diego, you know, just because he came up and he was the next coming in San Diego. But Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein kept a really close eye on him all the way through and had faith in him. But I think that, you know, they may have played on Rizzo's insecurities a little bit. So they did a really smart, shrewd thing with Rizzo. But at this point, Rizzo, 29 years old, going on 30, I don't know if he's the one that's going to get the whopper deal. And I don't know what he wants. Like, when he says he wants to be a Cub for life, I really believe that. Like, even more so than Chris Bryant, because it's just like, he's just a perfect fit for the Cubs. He has been. He's a quintessential Cub at this point. He is one of those guys that you will raise your hand for first or second on the Cubs 2016 World Series year, always. I mean, this is a guy who for the rest of his life is going to get standing ovations every time he comes back to Wrigley Field after he's done playing. And that complicates things a little bit in terms of if there is sentimental value from Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein. And I know that usually can't get in your way, but let's face it, man. Those are, especially Jed Hoyer, loves Anthony Rizzo and have been betting on this guy since the second he became a prospect that they have loved Anthony Rizzo. The guy that I think that maybe would be the best business right now to give an extension to on the Cubs, one Wilson Contreras. He becomes a free agent in 23. He had a bad year last year. But remember going into last year, he was a guy who was on people's MVP lists. And I think he's more of that MVP type of player than he was really a powerless player last year. And again, you may be able to play on a player's insecurities from last year. And I think that he is still going to be an all-star caliber player, even though he was an all-star last year. I don't know if he necessarily deserved it. So Contreras is the guy that I circle, and it's amazing we're not talking about Kyle Schwarber in this capacity. He's still got to prove it. Still has to prove it. All right, we'll take a break. More Cubs talk coming up. A little bit later on, too, more on the Sox. I want to bring our White Sox fans in, who are on the other side of the glass, Herb Lawrence and Adam Studzinski, to weigh in about Eloy Jimenez. We'll do that in the 11 o'clock hour. Coming up at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, let's talk some Bears right after the break. It's Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.